Roger McCord on his way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get in. Some timeouts they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside, the world's greatest basketball podcast, and even definitive, whatever that means. I'm Seth Greenberg, and along with my guy, Dan Dokic, who just experienced a little Big Five action yesterday as the Villanova Wildcats absolutely did what the Villanova Wildcats do. They put it to Temple, their 22nd consecutive Big Five win. It didn't seem like, to me, a rivalry game. It didn't seem like the energy and the passion was there, because maybe it's because of the way Villanova plays or because of all the success they've had in the Big Five. They haven't lost a Big Five game in 5 years. Dan, you were courtside. How did it feel to you?
Like you said, it did not feel like there was going to be a fight in the building. You know what I mean? Like, great rivalries, you always feel like there's going to be a fight in the building. Things get chippy. Things get edgy. It felt like two teams playing on a neutral court, which was odd. I know their fans for Temple were there. It was packed. But here's the problem. You jump out 7-0, you jump out 25-5, and you know what? You can't blame the fans. In fact, I thought the fans were booing. You know what I noticed about you East Coast guys? You ready?
All right, here we go. East Coast. I am a pure East Coast guy.
I told Mike Bray this today. East Coast guys talk with their hands. They yell with their hands. Like, there were so many poses. You know, you got the arms spread out, the Jesus pose. You got the what pose. You got the, forget about it. You got everything. And Temple guys, man, there were more hand motions in that game from the fans against the refs or whomever. But they had no chance because Villanova is, to quote my father, damn good. And Jalen Brunson, best performance and a half that I've seen all year. He just lit it up for 22.
How about Omari Spellman in the second half? Hey. I mean, goodness, he did his Carl Anthony Towns imitation.
He looked like a pro. And we use pro so much, you know, in our little business here, but he looked like a guy. Hey, how about this, Seth? I don't know if anybody's ever done this before. Same side, post the point guard, the five man is on the wing. So the five man's feeding. Yes. The five man is feeding the post. And if you help off the five man, the point guard who's on the block kicks it to the five man who drills a three. It was awesome last night, and Jay Wright couldn't be a better guy. Let's go that route.
You know what the crazy thing is? To me, it looks like, you know, and again, rivalry games. We've all played in rivalry games. I mean, I was at Pitt, and Pitt-Duquesne was a rivalry game. Pitt-West Virginia was a rivalry game. Virginia Tech were rivalry games. I think the amazing thing about Villanova is they don't get caught up in the hype. Look, no. They're number one. They've won 22 in a row. You watched their approach courtside. I watched it, obviously, on a monitor. Their approach is the next play. Their approach is, let's get a stop. Let's have a good offensive possession. Their approach is, you're not speeding us up. There was about one segment in the game that they sped Villanova up, and then there was a loose ball in the second half. And I don't even remember this play. And typical of Villanova, because this is what Villanova does. They pass with two hands. They catch with two hands. They shot fake. They ball fake. And they pivot. And if you remember the play, it was a two-hand pickup off the ground. It was a two-hand advance pass. It was a pass back to Brunson, who came to a jump stop, shot faked, got his feet underneath him, and knocked down a three. And to me, that play was a microcosm of what Villanova's all about, don't you think?
Yeah, I know the play. I know exactly the play. And I said early in the broadcast, Seth, it just struck me two things that Villanova does as well as anybody and better than most. I would assume maybe better than everybody. I don't know. But they get in the lane better than anybody I've seen. I mean, they just get in the lane, get in the lane, get in the lane. But they also catch the basketball. You know, it was just something that as I was watching, it just struck me. They catch the ball better. If they get hands on it, they are catching it. If they don't get it knocked away, they don't get a fumble. But I think they fumbled one ball out of bounds yesterday. I'm just telling you, man. They pass, catch better than I don't know. I've not seen anybody. And it's not something you can go into a film Like, I like to watch the last three games, and I'm watching. I'm like, man, they never drop a ball. Man, when they get two hands on it, they rip it away from other people. Man, when they go dive for it on a loose ball, they get it. I mean, it was just amazing. It really was. And Jay Wright, I had two NBA guy scouts tell me that they think he's the best coach in college basketball. They think his team is as well-schooled as most. All things told, nobody does it better than him. And I got to tell you, getting ready for the game and watching the game is hard to argue. They are terrific. Absolutely terrific.
He's the coach in college basketball, in my opinion, that if he decided to leave Villanova and go to the NBA, he would make as easy a transition because now he coaches his team hard, but in a way that's non-threatening. He knows who he is. I think that he has respect in terms of the players, and the players are held accountable, but in a way that is non-threatening a lot of ways. And his dudes get better. I mean, like, Mikal Bridges did not even. I can't even remember a big play he made. He made a three early on a post-entry, and they overran a passing lane tackle. They threw it to him. He knocked out a three in the corner. But they won that game going away. And a guy who some people think is at the end of the lottery, he doesn't even really post. Now, Jalen Brunson, I'm going to make my comparison, and it's a little bit different. He's this year's Malcolm Brogdon. He goes by his man. His man doesn't go by him. He looks like he's in slow motion. He always makes the right play. And yet all the NBA guys are going to walk around and say, well, I don't know. He's not quick enough. He's not. What's your opinion?
I don't disagree. Malcolm Brogdon, is he the rookie of the year in the league? Was he the rookie of the year last year? Yeah. I mean, that's, I don't disagree. He controls everything. You use the word sped up, and you can't because of him. He shoots it easy deep. He is strong. He is exactly like what you're talking about with Brogdon when he gets in the lane, and he just plays more under control offensively than you are playing defensively because, as you said, he hops, he pivots, and he ball fakes, and he controls the action when he gets the ball in a crowded situation. Look, you mentioned Bridges earlier, Seth. I watched him play Gonzaga, and Bridges was lights out. He was absolute lights out. And before the game yesterday, Phil Booth really wasn't supposed to play. He had a virus, didn't make the shoot around. So you're thinking to yourself, all right, well, without Booth, rivalry game, Temple's got a shot here. And if you'd have told me, well, Bridges isn't going to do a whole lot. He made two buckets. You mentioned the one, and then he came off a little stacking action on the right side into the lane and lifted up in the lane and made a bucket there. But really, I looked at Jason Benetti, my partner, and I said, hey, I'm not even sure we've mentioned Bridges' name. That's how good the others were, and that's how, well, quite frankly, I don't think Bridges cared. I mean, he cared, but I don't think he minded at all somebody else doing the, having a night. That's just the way that team rolls. It's fantastic. It's just everything about it was great. And I went in and talked to Jay before the game. He had a priest in there. Steve Pannone, John's brother, was in there. Just a great, great time. A great time for me in basketball. Just fun, really fun.
Imagine back in the day when those games were played in a palestra and there were double headers. Then you would have that. See, I think, look, the Big Five had to do it financially. Look, it's great for Temple. They get a home game against Villanova. They play half of them at home, half of them on the road. So, the St. Joe's, the Villanova's, the LaSalle's get good home games. But when those things were played at the palestra and you had double headers, then you could feel the energy. The only Big Five game to me that has that same feel is St. Joe's Villanova because they're 7 miles apart and there's just legitimately no love lost between their fans. Now, look, the great thing about the Big Five is the coaches in Philadelphia get along at a different level. They have, they had the great right after the NCAA selection. They have 1,000 people at a breakfast. They do all kinds of good things for Coaches versus Cancer. But it was disappointing that, here, you got a chance to knock off number one.
Yes.
And to me, and you got a bunch of city dudes, there had to be a little bit of, look, Villanova wasn't going to have that edge. They're going to just do what they do. That's why they're so good and so successful in these type of games. But if you're the underdog, to me, we were the underdog all those years we played Duke. And we said, we're going to draw a line in the sand. We're going to punch them right in the face the first play of the game. And we're going to keep knocking them back until they realize we're here. I was surprised Temple didn't have that fight
nothing.
In them yesterday.
Nothing. They had nothing. There was no, it was hollow. There was no insides. The place wanted to go. the place wanted to explode. It had a chance to, but really there was nothing. It was almost like, I don't know. It was just almost like, you know, I don't know. It was a neutral site game. It just felt like a neutral site game that wasn't a neutral site game. But the way Villanova, again, they start out 7-0. You got to call timeout when you're Fran Dunphy, and next thing you know, it's 25-5. Yeah, and your own crowd's crazy, booing you. I mean, hell, you're just trying to keep your footing. I thought Temple tried. I thought they fought back, but Villanova, to me, after watching them up close, I know there's a lot of good teams, and I know that by the end of this podcast, we'll have 17 teams in the Final Four. But what the hell? Villanova is a team that I've seen a lot of good ones, and they're great. Absolutely great.
All right, Big East. You got Villanova, Xavier, and Seton Hall with Creighton, I think, just outside.
Oh, I like Creighton.
And I love Seton Hall. Like, to me, Seton Hall has that chip. Seton Hall is like, they're the Rodney Dangerfield of college basketball. They get no respect. You know, they go to Louisville, they win. They play VCU, they win. The only game they didn't play well is URI, and that was a game where actually I thought emotion got the best of them. It was city dudes playing against city dudes. It turned into a little bit more of a rock fight. Guys lost their focus on what they need to do. But, like, Seton Hall, Kadeem Carrington goes from two-guard point guard seamlessly. Desi Rodriguez, put him anywhere on the floor, he's going to score. Angel Delgado, not only does he gobble up rebounds like Pac-Man, but when you double him, he is a terrific passer. Miles Powell makes shots. They got role players. They're good. And, you know, why do you think Xavier's so good?
I think Xavier.
I'm sorry. It's Creighton's so good. I'm sorry.
Well, when I watch them, they run their offense. They get down the floor. They can score. They have good defenders. And they reminded me a little bit of Villanova from the standpoint of they're going to do what they do. And it's really hard to stop. I mean, look, the Foster kid's been in college since I was. He's 107 years old. He's been guarding people. He's been playing. He's been doing all this stuff. They got veteran guys. I don't know. I just watched them. And, again, I think it was Gonzaga. They beat the hell out of. And maybe I have too much respect for Gonzaga doing a couple of their games in Portland, but I thought Gonzaga was a dang good basketball team, and I watched Creighton just take them apart. So again, it's always interesting to me, so much different college basketball than college football. You cannot in college football have a Gonzaga, a Creighton, or a Villanova, a small Catholic school, great facilities, all that, but they don't have Taj Mahals. They don't have all that, you know, you can't have that in football. And it's amazing to me watching these three programs with the rabid fan base, the big time, players continue year after year after year to be really, really good. And I would put Creighton in that category. Now, have they been to the Final Four like the other two have? No. One of them's won a national championship, Villanova. But I'm putting Creighton in there as a team that, wait a second, they can score. They score easy. They defend. They've got good individual ball defenders. They're a connected group, and they're a veteran group. What's wrong with that?
No, it's good. I think the league in general. I mean, look,
like Butler.
Xavier's got – oh, I was going to say, Butler's got three dudes that for sure. Kamar Baldwin is –
killer.
One of the best on-ball defenders, and I mean, he just comes after you. Keelan Martin, he can play for both teams at some times, but I mean, that guy's wired to score, and Tyler Wideman has got a toughness about him and experience. So when you have those three veteran core guys, then you can build around them. Butler's good. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Providence has had a little bump in the road. The UMass loss was rough for him, but you know, Ed Cooley will find a way to get him back. Marquette's hard to guard because, you know, let's face it, Hauser shoots threes and Rousey shoots threes. They spread you out. I mean,
Seth,
the league's pretty good.
I know Wisconsin's not great. Like, I know that. I mean, I'm not going to make any bones about it. And then they got hurt because Kobe King went out. Now he's out for the year and Trice is out. But I'm telling you what, I don't care who you are. You go into Wisconsin and win by 20, which is basically what Marquette did the entire game. That's something to me. You know, it just is. The one team that I think is so funny because it's a throwback. I don't know how many exactly. I was told this, and I can't remember. I think there's like 354 teams in college basketball that are Division I, something like that. The worst strength of schedule in the country is Georgetown. That's throwback, baby. That's John Thompson, the Big John. Getting it done through Patrick Ewing. Schedule nobody.
St. Leo's is next.
Oh, God. Just don't schedule Chaminade. Seth, they have played.
Oh,
I went through their schedule with, I forget, Andy Katz, I think, was on my radio show, the world's greatest radio show, by the way. And Yeah, it was like, are you kidding me? This is who they're playing? Are you insane? It's the best. Good for Patrick Ewing.
They got the Q's coming up. We're going to find out a little bit about. We're going to find a little bit about those guys. Obviously, with Syracuse on the horizon, and you get back to Marquette. I'll tell you the one thing. Now they lose Hanif Chatham. He decides to transfer. But when you have shot makers like Marcus Howard, he shoots it. You think it's going in. Andrew Rousey,
yes,
he shoots it. You think it's going in. Sam Hauser, he shoots it. You think it's going in. You know, I mean, so you have shot makers, which is, you know, obviously it makes it the way the game is officiated today. If you got guys who can put it on the floor and make shots, that's an advantage. Now, this guy, Harry Froehling, not again, he was at SMU, he transferred. I couldn't tell you who he is. They say he's a big body and he can set screens and maybe post-defend. There's another team. So that league is really good. But I'll tell you a league that was shocked last week. Shocked. And that's when BC, when Duke rolled into the Conti Forum, which is basically a hockey arena with the coldest facility in the ACC. And I have very bitter memories there.
I could tell. I could tell
it was not a good place for me and the Hokies rolling in there. But but I'll tell you what, it's a different place to play. I mean, and they absolutely exposed Duke's lack of an identity defensively, because like Duke, they don't know, are they a man team or zone team? Do they blitz ball screens? Do they switch ball screens? Do they down ball screens? Do they, you know, string them out? Are they committed defensively? Or just saying, you know, we got dudes who can score 100 in a given night, and we're just going to outscore you. But watching BC spread them out, and like BC's got good guards. Kai Bowman, really good. Jerome Robinson, really good. They outplayed Duke for 40 minutes. Now, was that the game before finals? Was that the different environment? Was the lack of expectation? Or did something get exposed on Duke, who barely beat Texas, who had PK-80, they got by Florida, but they got by Portland. But, you know, you got to believe that some red lights went up, you know, in Oregon, because they just didn't seem connected defensively. What do you think?
Yeah, and I made the mistake of saying I'd be surprised if they didn't go undefeated a couple weeks ago. So I'm surprised, but not really. That's a stupid statement by me. Yeah, I mean, look, Seth, I always thought this about Duke. You coached against them for years. I think Duke has evolved into a team that, look, they can beat anybody at any time because of their offense. We know that. But also, it seems like you can lose a little bit, too. And it's not really a shock when you go into a road game in a conference and the team that you're playing kind of plays out of their minds and beats you. It just isn't. And anybody that's coaching conference games understands that. So, you know, is Duke one of the best four teams in the country? My argument's going to be absolutely. Yeah. But they, you know, I keep saying this. There hasn't been an undefeated team since 76. So, you know what? You get beat, you move on. I talked to Mike Bray today about it. They got beat by Ball State. Got to keep his kids from not being too down on themselves. And you move on and you get ready for the next one. I don't know. It just feels like, God, do we overreact to a loss, right?
I think we overreact. Yeah, we do. Here's the thing. I mean, look, I mean, like, when we were fortunate enough to beat Duke and Carolina and those people, you know what people just say? The ACC, it's down, it's down, it's down. Or is it, you know what, you go on the road in league play and you raise your level of play, and maybe you like certain places. Like, I can tell you, Castle Coliseum, people don't like to go to Castle Coliseum. You know, I mean, right. It was loud. It's kind of a different environment. Yeah, you're not great restaurants in Blacksburg. I mean, it's just not a place that, oh, yeah, I can't wait till we get to Blacksburg. That's going to be a good road trip.
Right.
I mean, and the same thing is, you know, is BC. It's a different place. You stay way from the facility. The bus ride in, you can hit traffic. It could take a little longer. Not that that's an excuse. I mean, the locker room is a hockey locker room. It's colder than cold. You walk in there, literally there's no one there. They played Columbia the next game after that, and they played in front of 7,000 seats that were 7,000 empty seats. I mean, it's a different environment, but you know what? I'll tell you, Jim Christian can coach.
Yes, he can. That I coach can against coach. Him a lot. Yes. Yes.
I mean, spreads you out, runs good action. They play hard. They got a toughness about them. He's even keeled in his approach to with his team, and now they got good guard play. And you know what? They played without Deontay Hawkins, who's out for the season, who, you know, transferred as a fifth year guy. And, you know, I think, you know, as much as we talk about Duke, we got to tip our hat to BC,
yes,
saying, you know what? That's pretty good. Now I'm going to ask you a question about your conference. You're not your conference. They're all your conferences. I mean, you are like America's analyst, but I mean, one day, you know, you're in Philadelphia. The next day you might be in Madison. Who knows where you're going to be next, but Northwestern,
yes,
the defensive juggernaut they are, held Chicago State to 8 points. Is Northwestern fixed?
Oh, I don't think so, but I think they played a really good game, and I think they looked so much better when they went into West Lafayette and played them down the stretch, actually had the ball. I think it was down one or down two in the last seconds. I'm not going to say they're fixed for the reason we just talked about, Seth. Look, Chicago State, all right, I mean, Tracy Dildy's a good guy. He's got a bad situation there. And that thing got away from him, you know, and next thing you know, it's 53-8 or something like that at halftime.
Something like that.
But no, I don't think they are. The one thing about Northwestern, and I'm really curious whether you agree with this, is just because you make the NCAA tournament doesn't mean you've arrived. Doesn't mean
100%.
That, you know, you're not Michigan State because you made one tournament. And I think that's really hard for players because I think that players oftentimes only remember the end of the season. Seth, when I was a freshman at Indiana, it was the fall of 1981. Well, in the spring of 1981, Indiana had won a national championship with Isaiah and Landon Turner and Ray Tolbert, Randy Whitman, all these guys. Well, the first thing, because you couldn't really practice then, the first thing that Coach Knight did at practice was stop it and rip everybody. For you guys, and I'll never forget what he said, you guys only remember, you returning guys, only remember the success at the end of the year. You don't remember how hard it was to get to the end of the year. You don't remember back a year ago, October 15th is when we could practice. And here you are doing defensive slides. Here you are doing blockout drills. Here you are doing two-on-one rebounding, killing yourselves to learn the way to play. And that's kind of what I feel about Northwestern. They've only remember the end of the year, the pep rally, when we made the tournament, the win on the no goaltending, all those kind of things. And you go, oh, man, you're right, because that's human nature is to do that. So I think once you get in the Big Ten, you're going to learn real quick. But I do think Northwestern played a hell of a game at Purdue in a tough environment against a good Purdue team that I think bodes well for them coming moving forward. I do.
Here's my thing. Do they miss Sanjay Lumpkin?
Oh,
like,
God,
I started looking at their thing. I mean, like here's a Purdue team that, you know, all right, so Bryant McIntosh, you know, he had all the hype and, you know, he's a good player. I'm not sure he's not a great player. He's a good player. He knows how to play. He has good feel, high basketball IQ. All right. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, Derek Pardon is a good player. I mean, they've got good players It seems to me, and maybe I'm wrong, it seems to me they got a bunch of dudes now, upperclassmen, mostly seniors, that think that, you know what, this is my last day. Senior teams are hard to coach. They're hard to coach because a lot of those guys, it's their last time through the door. They've heard it before. They, like you said, they think they've arrived. I mean, Scotty Lindsey, I mean, you know, he needs to get his. McIntosh needs to get his. You know, Vic Law, who really was a lockdown defender and a, you know, a guy that plays off of other people, makes some open shots, you know, he needs to get his. You know, you lose Sanjay Lumpkin, you add Falzone, who's basically a spot-up guy that doesn't do all those intangibles. Is that the difference in this team?
I think it is. I think it is early, Seth. I think that anytime you lose – well, you know this. Every team is different, and you lose this guy, and this guy may not seem like the guy that's going to be on the cover of a magazine, but the chemistry is different. And I think one of the things that Sanjay Lumpkin could do, and this is, again, I think so important in the Big Ten where the arenas are big and the pressure is on, and particularly at Northwestern where you don't want to have a bad loss, I think he really stayed calm. Like, I don't think Sanjay Lumpkin ever got outside of who he was. He was a very good defender, a terrific help defender, could play defense on the ball, could play defense off the ball, could play pick-and-roll basketball. He was a space guy, meaning he stayed wide when he had to. He could shoot the basket. Yeah, and And you could do a lot of things with him. And he had, I thought, no ego. Now, I wasn't there every day. Maybe he had a huge ego, but he never played with having an ego. And I just think that when you lose a guy like that, you lose something from the mix of the team, you know, the batter.
People don't understand that.
Yeah,
though.
And that's...
They don't understand it.
It's not like you can't overcome it. And I think they will. I think they'll be very good. You know, they got the big win. They were down most of the game against Illinois. They came back, won at home, a game they had to have, and they played well at Purdue.
Got a big non-conference game coming up, Oklahoma. They need a non-conference win because the Big Ten,
yes,
if they don't get Purdue, they don't get Michigan State, and they don't get Minnesota, maybe, I don't know how many times they played Minnesota, then you know what? I'm not sure they have enough on their resume. I mean, they got whacked by Texas Tech. The loss at Georgia Tech is going to hurt them.
They got DePaul, which would be a road game, which would be okay.
DePaul's better.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't know that they can play Oklahoma. I'm doing that game, actually, and I've done an Oklahoma game earlier.
That's why I said you're America's analyst.
I just think that Oklahoma is one of those teams. Hey, this will be interesting. Let me back up a second.
They're going to get 90. Yeah. Oklahoma's getting 90.
Yeah, and then, you know what, though? All right, here goes back to our coach's theory. You're playing a game at Oklahoma with a young star, right? The game before they go home for Christmas. Now, is Oklahoma going to be great? You know, I mean, I'm telling you, that game before
hard game
Christmas.
To play for Oklahoma. Hard game.
Yes.
Hard game.
Yes.
That's a throw-up game. You feel like throwing up before that one.
All day.
No doubt about it. Where's the porcelain god? Mm. Let me go before we walk out about the 22-minute mark after we set him out for the scouting report. Yeah,
because you know you think those kids from Texas, Oklahoma, all that like Northwest, yeah, they made the tournament. But come on, we'll win that game and then we'll go home. Well, hold the phone, peoples. Northwestern's going to be Northwestern, and when you're the road team, you go down there and you're kind of all together. You know what I mean? You're kind of together and you're kind of I don't know. It's better almost sometimes to be the road team in those situations than the home team. Sometimes we'll see.
All right, and here's the last two. We got to get through these fairly quick. I think Gabe will probably fire us both. There's a family that's moving to Lithuania.
Yeah. Good riddance.
What's your first take on the family moving to play in the Baltic League in front of friends and family, and eating the fine cuisine of a town of 750?
The funniest,
do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I do have an opinion. Goodbye, adios. Go. I think if I were, you know, a brand manager, I would recommend you play at UCLA to enhance your brand in the middle of Lithuania for a coach that apparently, according to Jimmy Barron Jr., or Billy Barron, I guess, sells meat out of the back of his car to the players after practice. So, adios. Have fun. Hope it works out for you. Let us know when you come back.
Cold there if you can sell meat out of the back of the car.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a good thing.
Coach, I'm done with practice. I need some chops. Coach, I need some chops. Give me some. Do you have any chops back? No, I just got brisket. Oh, okay, I'll take the brisket. Come on.
That's the end. We won't mention names because I don't want to mention names.
No.
And then the other crazy thing that happened this week is now Louisville wants their money back if they get that banner taken down, which sounds like they are expecting to have the banner down and have to replace all that money because of, you know, allegedly playing players that had extra benefits. And I don't know, that's a new definition of extra benefits in college athletics. They're countersuing Rick Pitino. Do you think that's just Rick wants his money, we'll countersue, boom, we'll come together, we'll give him a couple million and be on our way? Do you think Louisville's saying, you know what, we want our money? What's your gut feeling? I'm going to put the Esquire hat on you.
Yeah.
I think of you as an Esquire anyway, besides America's Analyst. And of course, the leader of the world's greatest radio show and just your partner in the world's greatest podcast.
Yes.
So what's your take, Esquire?
My take is shockwaves through college basketball. Wait a second. You got the FBI first, and now you got a school coming back for all the cash. I always believe these things are going to be settled out of court somehow, some way. But the interesting thing will be in which way. like, you know, I go back to Kelvin Sampson. He got $750,000 to leave Indiana. It was just a settlement for him to go away. I thought at some point maybe Louisville would do that with Patino. But my gut says that's not the way it is anymore. My gut says that Louisville has had enough. Louisville's going to come at. I would guess Louisville has more money for attorneys than what Patino does. I think it's going to be very interesting what happens here. And also, I think it's going to be, again, shockwaves through college basketball coaches. Like, let me ask you a question. If you're Louisville, you're going after Kenny Johnson too? Because apparently Kenny Johnson was in there on tape. You fired him. Is he part of the people you're suing? Because he's involved if in fact, banners go down. I would think that they're suing him too.
I think that they know that Rick Pitino's worth a couple more dollars than Kenny Johnson.
Yeah, that's probably
I think
true.
That my gut feeling is because Rick's looking to get that money that, quote-unquote, he says they owe him. You know, obviously this seems like a political move to kind of make that go away, or at least play his bluff. But I'll tell you what, this is an expensive game of poker because, one, if Rick fights it, it's going to cost him a ton of money unless he's got some of his guys that are going to take care of it. If he loses, it's going to cost him a ton of money. And let's face it, the longer it goes on, even if he had a desire to get back in somewhere, somehow, some way to coach, no one's messing with this unless he goes, I'll tell you where he can make $1 million a year, $1.5 million. Coaching in Europe at the highest level, I would think he could get a job at that because I'm not sure the NBA is an option.
Why is the NBA?
Well,
not
I mean, why do I think it's not an option?
Yeah.
I think that the NBA guys I speak to say, well, can Rick's style work in the NBA? Now, I've talked to some people say, Rick is really mellowed. He's not that control freak that he was. He could transition into the NBA. Look, the guy's a great coach. There's no denying, his ability to coach. But I think the perception in the league's a players' league. You got to have a cachet, either a former player or a guy that's had, incredible success and who can connect with the players. Do you think all this that's happened hurts his ability to connect with the NBA player?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't. I think he's got – I can't imagine, what is he, 60, 62, 60, whatever he is. I can't imagine.
He's 63 or 64.
Yeah, I can't imagine that his mentality towards players can be the same. I don't know. Honest to God, I was talking to two NBA guys last night, and they were asking me about guys, and I said, I don't understand your league because some guys that I think are going to make it as a coach, I thought Fred Hoiberg would be a great coach. Fred Hoiberg would have a great personality for it. Now, he doesn't have players. I honestly don't know. If I were an NBA team and I was looking to make a splash, I would investigate Rick Pitino as my head coach. I would, because he knows basketball, obviously.
Great coach.
And, if he's going to be crazy, then I don't hire him. But I have got to take a look at Rick Pitino before I hire just some other guy. Now, if there's another guy that I know is good, that I don't have any questions about, I hire him. But if I don't have that guy, I've got to reach out to Rick Pitino if I'm an NBA team and say, look, let's go through this. Let's sit down. Let's have about 10 different discussions and figure out where we're at here, because I would not mind, if I was an NBA team, having that guy on my bench for a variety of reasons.
You think someone can hire him while this thing is still going on?
I do. I think you can in the NBA. I don't think that you can in college. What does the NBA care about a college lawsuit? I don't know that they do. I don't know that they don't. It's just like if I were an owner – I'd say, here's the thing, Seth. And my brother taught me this. My brother's a business guy. He's like, look, we get sued all the time. You guys worry about all this little crap. Adidas is suing you. Well, I don't know. Like Jerry Jones said, he was handed a thing on the field and he was being sued for $50 million. And he looked and handed the thing back to his assistant and said, we've been sued for more than that. Don't worry about it. So it's a different world with billionaire business people than it is for us. We hear lawsuit, we go, oh, man. They hear lawsuit, they go, okay, what is it, Thursday? Yeah, good. I swear, it's. I've been taught that. I hear a lawsuit, and I'm like, what did I do?
Oh, my. Oh, my goodness. Well, D-Square, what do we got for you? What do you got this weekend?
This weekend, I don't have anything. I'm going to watch Appalachian State and The Ohio State University, and then on Sunday, I'm flying to Where the hell am I going? I'm going to Lawrence, Kansas. I got Omaha at Kansas, baby.
Oh, so you're going to heal the Kansas Hills, all right?
I've never been. Yes.
Oh, you're going to, it's great. I'm going to give you my one take on Kansas.
Yes.
I'm going to give you three names. Three names. All right, I think we might have talked about this. Perry Ellis.
Yes.
Landon Lucas.
Yes.
And Kevin Young.
Yes,
those
yes,
are
yes.
three guys that Kansas never had a run to play for, would set a screen, were alert defenders on and off the ball, rebounded the ball, and you know what? They made everyone else better. Kansas doesn't have a guy like that right now.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I coached as an assistant 1 year in an epic game, overtime game, Jacques Vaughn for them. We had Damon Bailey, and it was unbelievable going down the stretch, and fog was as loud as it's ever been. I'm looking forward to it. I know Omaha hasn't done a whole lot, but what the hell? Go to Kansas, have a good, you know, have a great evening of basketball. So there you go.
You know what I'm you just, should do? You should call my man Barry Sachs and find out where to eat because he always has these great restaurants, you know, that you can go to eat.
Well, I'm going to put it out for our listeners here because the world's greatest podcast I know has zillions of listeners, particularly in Kansas, where I've learned that they don't necessarily like you or I. And I know that in Kentucky, they don't like you or I. Louisville does not like you or I at all, Louisville, which makes me feel good about the world. But that's a different story. I'm putting out to our listeners, just send me at Dan Dockage where to go eat in Kansas, and I will be there on Sunday night. Sunday night I'll be there.
There you go. There you go. When we come back, I'm going to have a conversation with the head Sun Devil, undefeated Arizona State head coach Bobby Hurley, and we'll take your questions from the student section.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
I'd like to welcome in Arizona State head coach Bobby Hurley. And Bobby, you know, we had a chance to see you last year in the Garden. That was after the Kentucky game, which was obviously not the best you guys have played, losing 115-69. Then Purdue kind of puts it on you a little bit. I remember walking out of the locker room. I'm saying there'll be better days. And I know Coach K always talks about the Virginia game in the ACC tournament, and saying, you know, his assistant coach saying, let's put this one behind us and forget about this. And Coach K saying, we'll never forget about this. And how did you get your team from that moment, Kentucky and Purdue, to where you are today?
I mean, it's happened really fast at the last couple of weeks. I mean, I just, we were interested to find out where we stand. I mean, that's what everyone's doing kind of in a non-conference is you're testing yourself. You're playing some home games that you feel good and confident you can win. And then you have the games on your schedule, like the Kansas State and Xavier and St. John's and San Diego State and obviously at Kansas. So those are the games where you really learn a lot about your team. But it's I think 100% that, you know, what the seniors have had to go through and, you know, some really dark times, you know, with some bad losses. And, you know, they fought really hard in the Pac-12 last year. I thought we kind of overachieved based on just our personnel, especially our front court. And, you know, we've Romello White was a redshirt last year. I knew that he would make an immediate impact and make us better. You just don't think it's going to equate to this right away.
Yeah, you talk about Romello White. He's kind of an interesting piece because, you know, your mindset is to attack. And when you attack, obviously it opens up some threes and you got great guards. But Romello White's ability to get to the line and finish and make plays around a basket and get to the foul line, did you expect that?
Yeah, he's a very rugged guy. He enjoys contact, very, very physical. I mean, a lot of bigs right now shy away from contact and more rather float on the perimeter. And, you know, he knows who he is as a player and, he's got great wingspan and very good hands. And, you know, I just knew because I really felt the guards would be difficult for defenses to keep in front of them, Trey Holder, Shannon Evans, Remy Martin, and just puts a lot of pressure on the defense, especially in ball screens. And it's hard to really even come off guys on the perimeter because you got guys like Cody Justice and, you know, each of my guards that are shooting over 42% from three. So it's just, you know, it's kind of pick your poison. And sometimes Melo gets lost in the shuffle and you can't afford to do that because he's, you know, he's very good at finishing around the basket. And then teams that are out of position, he'll make you pay for it.
You mentioned Trey. Trey was one of those holdovers, and obviously got banged around a little bit the first 2 years. How have you been able to keep a guy like that, that, you know, has yet to have success until this year? How do you keep a guy like that moving forward and seeing and sharing your vision as you're trying to build this thing?
Yeah, I mean, we just, you know, we talked a lot last year, and I feel like, you know, I try and build that bond with the point guards and my guards especially, and we meet quite a bit talking about a lot of things relative to being competitors and competition and how, you know, we need to play moving forward. And I think that they saw Melo in practice last year and knew that they were going to have a guy in the front court that could be a difference maker and give our team more balance. And then, you know, we also added Daquan Lake, who's done some nice things already this year, junior college transfer, blocking shots and dunking. And so the guys, I think, were more excited for this season and felt there was a legitimate chance to win games and have a chance to play in the tournament. That's what's, you know, they've never experienced postseason. You know, Trey and Cody and Shannon did the 1 year with me at Buffalo, but they wanted to go out the right way, and they're hungry to try and get that done.
You've got shot 118, I think, more free throws than your opponents, yet you've got all those guys shooting, you know, at a high clip from the three. How important is that for those two things to complement each other, to give your team that type of balance?
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. You just don't want to be out of balance. And if you're shooting too many threes, then you're settling for jump shots and you're not getting to the rim where, you know, all the guards, I'm very fortunate that they, you know, they could shoot the three and shoot good percentages, but they also want to attack and get in the paint and make plays. And, you know, they could do it at all three levels. You know, they could, you know, they hit the deep shot. They got the floaters and the mid-range game, and then they could get to the rim too. So it's, and that's, you know, something that Coach K, you know, playing for him, he always, you know, talked about that with our teams, is that, you know, we want to make more free throws than our opponents shoot. And that's something that we've been able to do. And I'm sure, you know, Seth, that some of that might have to do with Cameron Indoor and the built-in advantage on that home court. You might get to the line a little bit more when you're Cameron Indoor.
Yeah. I helped him get on the line because I got tossed the first time I coached there. I gave him a couple of extras on the way out. And speaking of home environment, how's the community embraced what you're doing? I mean, you guys have a fun style of basketball. The Suns are struggling a little bit right now. I mean, how's it been now for Arizona State basketball within the community and the excitement, the energy that you guys have been able to create?
Yeah, it's just been a buildup. You know, we right away from the San Diego State win, that was, you know, to score 92 or I think it was 92 on San Diego State, and the way they've built their program on defense. Initially that got some attention here, and people started to say, okay, you know, maybe these guys, you know, are going to, you know, get this thing going. And then going to Vegas and beating Kansas State and Xavier the way we did, and Trey to have 40 points, and you know, it was more buzz when I got back. You just, more people stopping me at the grocery store and at the gym, and, you know, and then you're getting a real feel on social media that you know, people are enthusiastic about what we're doing. And then kind of went to a whole different level when you go to Kansas and win there. And I think it's just the way that we did it too. And I thought it was a very entertaining, you know, I mean, you know, the tension and the anxiety were there in full force, and I kept looking at the clock, hoping the time would go by. But it was, I also had a chance to just appreciate how well my team was playing and, you know, putting points on the board and playing very freely and on instinct. And it was something. So when we got back, we had people, you know, at our practice facility, a couple hundred people that greeted us that night. And there's been a lot of talk about us here. So it's been exciting.
You talk about that Kansas experience. I was fortunate. My Long Beach team went into Kansas when they were number one, and we were fortunate enough to win after we lost to VCU by about 400. Mm. It was a two-game road trip. But I remember in the second half sitting there with like 60 minutes left, turning to my trainer and said, we were up like 16 or so. What do you think, Bales? And he said, hey, you know they got a run in them. And then talking to him at the 12-minute, what do you think, Bales? I said, hey, you know, this is Fog Allen Fieldhouse. And finally, about 4 minutes left, he tapped me on the shoulder. We're up at 16. And he said, will you sit down and enjoy this a little bit? And I mean, it's a magical place when you're sitting there and watching your team play the way they did. And now those three guys are seniors and you know, obviously they're having an opportunity to have a shared experience. What advice do you give a guy like Trey? I mean, like, he went from a guy that everyone said, you know, he could really shoot the ball, to now all of a sudden he's a guy to say, wait a second, this guy's an All-American. He might be able to play any, you know, he could play himself into a first-round draft choice. How do you handle attention that he's getting? Because you did it. You lived it.
Yeah, I mean, he's such a level-headed kid. Like, Trey doesn't even have a Twitter, you know, or social media. He doesn't have so he doesn't even really pay attention to a lot of that stuff. And he's, you know, very grounded kid, you know, great family and his family traveled just about every game and to watch him. And so I think he's just like caught up in the moment and not looking beyond that. And, you know, for him to get 29 there and then 40 at Xavier, I mean, he's playing at such a high level, but it's, you know, he's worked on his game, you know, each year and has gotten better in certain areas. He was always good at drawing fouls in the lane and very good in ball screens, but he's worked on his catch and shoot game and his deep three. I mean, his three is very comfortable at NBA range and he's made that more consistent, where he's not, you know, a mid-30s guy, he's a mid-40s guy right now. So it's I'm just happy for him, because I know how hard he's worked and he had to suffer through, you know, even a coaching change and then, you know, going through 2 years where you're kind of just in the middle. So he wants it from a team standpoint. You know, he's showing what a winner he is and making big shots at key moments for us.
Now, Shannon followed you from Buffalo, obviously, to Arizona State. How important was that, just to have a guy that kind of could explain you in locker room to your team and say, wait a second, hey, coach is intense, but there's a method to his madness on how we're trying to get there. How big a role did he play in that year sitting out, just giving guys an understanding of your love and how much you care about the players?
Yeah, I think, it was crucial, you know, for me to have him. Even, you know, I mean, he elevated Trey and vice versa, you know, just him in practice every day and just how he competed and the way he played every day with a chip on his shoulder. It pushed Trey to get better. And I think we're having that same effect with Remy Martin, the freshman we had at 22 against Kansas. And, you know, he gets to practice against these guys every day. He runs the second unit and, you know, that's a great experience. But yeah, just the locker room and I could get after it and in film and then, you know, if the effort isn't there, there's a price to pay for it. But, you know, I feel like I have a good way of putting together a structure that we get the most out of our players without it happened to be an environment that they're like, wow, I got to tune this guy out, man. I've had enough of hearing him. You know, I try and find that balance, and I'm sure that Shannon probably helped in that regard. But I looked over at him a lot that year he sat out, and I was like, man, can I put you back in the game, man? It was hard not having him, you know, out on the floor.
Yeah. All right, last question. Hey, so we can have a Hurley-Hurley matchup? I mean, like, there's a rumor that Millers might play. I think a Hurley-Hurley matchup would be that's made for TV magic.
Yeah, I was shocked to see the Millers agree to that. Just you know those guys are close, and you know I get it. It's great exposure, but yeah, for Dan and I, man, we're too close friends, and you know I learned so much from him and so much respect for him, and would never you know want to do it independently. You know, if we're both in the tournament or something, and it happens that way, then. And everyone's doing pretty well, and we'll just cross that bridge when we get to it. But that'd really be the only way, Seth.
Hey, I your dad might be able to handle it. Your mom, there'd be no chance of her being able to handle that.
Yeah, the nerves would kick in, and she wouldn't know which direction to go for sure.
Well, hey, congratulations, man! It's fun watching your team play. It's fun watching you have success with. Your kids that are totally buying into what you're doing and your vision, and you know, hey, sometimes you got to learn to lose before you learn to win, and keep it up, and have a great holiday with your family, and good luck the rest of the way.
Absolutely, Seth. Happy holidays to you and your family too. Thanks, man.
And here they come, folks. Here they come.
It's time for you to storm the podcast. Let's hear from the student section.
All right, guys, our first question of the day comes from a Mike Cousins. Who are your top three teams in the ACC right now? Seth, you first.
Right in this moment in time, I would say that Duke is the top team in the ACC. I think it's hard to question that. I would say that North Carolina is the second best team in the ACC, and I would say Miami is the third best team in the ACC. Miami's backcourt. Now, they got to get Bruce Brown back, but tell you what, Lonnie Walker Jr. is playing at a high level now that he's getting major minutes. They got Philly guards and Jaquan Newton. Duan Yule's played well. So I would say it's Duke, Carolina, and Miami with Florida State right behind them.
I really like what North Carolina has done. I mean, North Carolina, I know they lost to Michigan State, and that's a bad loss and all that, but they pretty much whooped up on everybody else, including Michigan in the ACC Big Ten Challenge. They had a big one with Tennessee coming up. But you're going to ask me, I'm going Duke is the best team just because of resume. I think Miami's the second best team, and I like Carolina. I just – man, I you know what? Luke May, the walking double-double.
How about that? Unbelievable.
They're 18th in the country of scoring. They score 88 points. And what the difference between North Carolina and everybody else's scoring average will fall. North Carolina will stay right there. So I like those three teams.
All right, our next and last one of the day is from a Sky S. Does Dylan Osikowski have a chance to be player of the year this year in the Big 12? Who are your guys' contenders?
From Texas. No, Trae Young. The guy's averaging 28, 8.8 assists, shoots 37% from the three-point line. Two steals, the ball's in his hands, he makes plays. I would say right now it would be Trae Young, and then, you know, I think after that, it's an interesting thing. I'm not sure there's another guy. You know, early on you'd say Devontae Graham had his back-to-back huge games, like 34 points a game, which, you know, huge big-time games. But Trae Young has been consistent. Oklahoma has been really good. And Javon Carter would be my second pick at West Virginia. He's got West Virginia on his back, making plays. Those would have been my two.
Well, Carter went out, and they weren't very good against Pittsburgh. You know, so I, as a most valuable player, look, I am Polish. I got tired of hearing all the Italian guys on ESPN, Vitale, and oh, the Italians, Patino. So I'm going to say that Ostankowski, just simply because he's
Osikowski.
Polish.
Osikowski.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I didn't know how to say it. I saw him play and I liked him.
Come on, you're a Polish guy. You haven't pronounced the dude's name.
Yeah, I got the ski part right. If it starts with an O and ends with a ski, that's all you got to know, Oski. I think he's very good. I do, but I don't think Texas is good enough for a most valuable player of the year type. But I do think that Devontae Graham is, and I do think that Trae Young. I'm going to say this about Trae Young, same thing I said when I did one of their games. In a world where everybody wants to be Steph Curry, he's the closest that I have seen. And not only because he shoots the ball from deep, but I'll never forget Bob Knight saying on television about Steph Curry, he's the best passing guard I've seen in a long time. And people forget not only is this kid Trae Young leading the country in scoring, but he's averaging 8.8 assists as well. So until further notice, there always has to be a Kansas guy in the Player of the Year conversation, Graham being that guy. But, man, do I like Trae Young, and I'm not going to be surprised to see if he isn't the Player of the Year in the league.
I think that's a pretty good one. I'm going to give you my outside choice.
Please.
Just to give Keenan Evans, Texas Tech. Because you know what Texas Tech they are? They're a group of grown men.
Yeah.
Texas Tech is no joke.
Yeah, I'm going to give you who's not going to be the Player of the Year, but you're going to hear more about him than anybody other than Trae Young, and that's Muhammad Bamba. Muhammad Bamba is a very limited basketball player. Muhammad Bamba, if he were going to be a great college player, now he's going to leave and he's going to be drafted early and all that stuff, but if he was going to be a great college player, it would take him until his junior year, in my opinion, to become a great college player. But he'll be gone by then. But man, oh man, is he a limited college basketball player. So he will not, he will be the guy that's most talked about that has the least chance to be the Player of the Year. How about that?
I like that. And you know what? I'd like to thank everyone for listening. We'll be back next week. And please download us on your ESPN app or wherever you look to download your podcast. And you know what? Please leave a rating. And I think it's going to be a terrific rating. Not a good rating, but absolutely a great rating for the world's greatest podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.